The central processing hall of Pavlov City was a madhouse. Prisoners, or volunteer workers as the Reds euphemistically called them, were continuing to be brought in from all around the Midwest. Every hour brought more of the workers and lower dredges of society, garbage people, thieves, beggars, the lowest of the underclass, into Pavlov City. The entire city was a factory for turning docile American workers into killing machines for the Reds. Colonel Kieloff, now in control of the fortress, allowed the processing to continue at full speed, as he himself had not yet decided the final outcome of his takeover of the brainwashing center. With KGB guards stationed at strategic spots, the Red Army troops continued to process the new prisoners and funnel them into the mine-breaking building. The workers were transported in by truck, chopper, and freight jet, and fed through main processing, a football field-sized concrete-walled building where the workers were photographed, given a set of gray clothes, and tattooed with an electric branding iron on their shoulders. The Red Guards continued to tell them they were being trained for working with special machinery, which would bring them increased benefits and privileges. Few of the workers really believed this, but had little choice. Armed troops were everywhere. Chaplain 47 had been trucked in from the Russian fortress city of Trotskyville, where he had been unceremoniously hauled from his cot in the middle of the night and stuffed into a red diesel truck that joined a convoy carrying thousands of other workers. He was unloaded just inside the gates of Pavlov City and herded into the processing hall. He was frightened and showed it. His squat face nearly chalk white, his narrow lips pursed tightly as he clamped his teeth together hard. He wasn't a large man, about 5 feet 4 inches, and not that strong, so he wasn't sure just what the Reds wanted with him. Most of the other Americans in the hall were bigger. His life in Trotskyville had not been pleasant, but somehow he felt that what lay ahead would make his alleyway cardboard home soon seem like a paradise in comparison.
You!
Me?
Yes, you! Over here!
Yes?
Stand in line.
With those naked men?
Yes, this rope.
Now?
I won't ask you a second time. Clothes off! Now, place your clothes on the conveyor belt over there for incineration. We won't stand for any lice here.
Yes, sir.
Chaplain 47 deposited his prized blue flannel shirt with only 3 holes in it on the conveyor and watched sadly as it was sucked down the ramp and disappeared through a small door. It had taken him nearly 3 months to get the shirt. Real flannel. He stood there quivering in the slight chill of the late afternoon, covering his rather small genitals from the view of the other men who stared nervously straight ahead. The line moved slowly with Chaplain at the end, and the group entered a large room. The men slowly relaxed under the hot streams and began to enjoy the sensation. It was the first time many of them had ever felt hot water.
Pick up the brown soap on the floor and the scrub brushes and wash your body thoroughly. Any man who is not clean will be punished.
The cleanest group of men who ever walked the planet emerged 5 minutes later from the other side of the washroom and were handed sets of drab clothing. They were herded into another room and questioned briefly by Red Army officers about their age, health, place of origin, and job function. After questioning, Chaplain 47 was taken to the mess hall, a huge room filled with tables. Everywhere were workers dressed all in the same gray outfits, slurping away at their thin stews and eating coarse loaves of bread. Chaplain 47 hungrily took a tray, loaded up with food, and moved off to an empty seat to gobble down the meal. More food than he had seen at one time for years. After the meal, the men seemed a little more cheerful, and smiles were even seen here and there. After all, at least they weren't going to be shot. Who would feed a man and then kill him? Knowing that their lives extended into the near future at any rate, and with full stomachs, the workers faced their unknown fates with a trace less anxiety. Chaplain 47 was led through a series of barracks along with 20 other men. Pavlov City was already huge and growing by the day. The groups of barracks were laid out in concentric circles, the outer circles growing at the rate of one new 100-man barrack per day, built by the slave labor under the watchful eyes of the ever-present guards. Chaplain was taken to one of the newest of the barracks and shown a small cot.
Sleep!
Chaplain 47 would lay awake for hours, wondering just what the hell was going on and what his fate would be. He prayed to some unknown god that he not suffer too greatly. At last he fell asleep, dreaming of happier days far back in his childhood. The burning sun smashed into his eyes and throbbing flesh. He was lying in a bed of dark brown grass.
Oh, it's you. I remember the thorns. I'm still alive. The anti-venom worked. And goddamn snorter's stronger than I am. You've been up for hours, haven't you? Eh.
Rock tried to stand himself.
Maybe in a bit.
It was early in the morning. The sun was painting a smooth arc of red light above the purplish-brown sky. How long had he been under? 24? 48 hours? It felt like an eternity. Every nerve, every fiber of his being ached and pulsated as if infected. His ears buzzed. His eyes stared straight ahead as he found it hard to focus on anything. But he was alive. He had survived once again. Rock struggled to get to his feet and somehow made his way the few yards to the hybrid. He lifted the 4-quart canteen from the saddle and opened it.
Oh no, not again.
He felt himself falling, saw the ground rushing up like a fist.
Wake up! Follow me!
The prisoners were led through hall after hall until they came to central processing. The 100 men were taken up in an immense elevator, nearly 50 feet wide, and led down a long, brilliantly lit hall.
Walk!
Suddenly, the slaves' lack of concern disappeared. Their guts tightened into knots. Something was wrong.
Keep moving!
No! They're gonna kill me!
Anyone else who tries to escape will die the same way.
Oh, sweet Jesus. What are they going to do to me?
The workers were led into an immense chamber filled with rows of strange plastic seats with helmets hovering just above them. The rows of seats with what looked like space helmets extended off as far as Chaplain 47 could see. Overhead, burning fluorescent lights hung down, casting the peculiar scene with a merciless brilliance.
Now sit down in the seats!
The workers sat, one after another, surrounded on all sides by the Russian guards.
Do not resist! The hand clasps are for your own protection!
All the captives were now strapped firmly in place. An officer of some kind, with a white smock covering his uniform, stood in the aisle between the rows and addressed them.
Welcome to Pavlov City, American citizens. You are here to be retrained. Retrained in your minds. The way you think and feel. You will not be killed, I assure you. And any pain you feel is only part of the necessary surgery we must perform on you. Just as an operation for a broken arm or leg causes pain, but in the long run is good for the organism, so must we perform a sort of operation on your minds. You enter this chamber as workers, but you shall leave here as soldiers for the cause of world communism.
As he spoke, guards had gone up and down the rows of prisoners, lowering the helmets down onto the workers' heads, setting them down so that the two long steel prongs, sharp as ice picks, just touched the scalps of the workers. Chaplain 47 felt the cold steel at his skull.
Oh, Jesus, no, no. They're gonna stick those in my brain. This can't be happening.
Silence!
I suggest very strongly that you go with the commands you will hear. Do not resist. If you resist, you may well die. I have seen those men who have fought back against this mind processing, and they made me want to vomit. So if you care anything about your wretched lives, surrender your will. Go with it. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain.
The scientist looked at the rows of recruits for the Mindbreaker and stepped back toward the control panel at one end of the room. The guards, too, stepped away as they had been splattered before by exploding brains and knew enough to keep their distance.
Begin the procedure!
Emerald green lights came on at the very tips of the prongs, which poked down from beneath the helmets. Slowly, ever so slowly, moving at a snail's pace, the laser probes began lowering into the Americans' heads, pushing through the bone, grinding down into the skull cavity. The bone beneath the laser's emerald light began melting and went up in puffs of acrid smoke. Then the needles pushed deeper into the soft gray tissue of the human mind, burning out memories, destroying whole systems of self-regulation and command.
And soldiers, now, your obedience is to Mother Russia. Your American self is gone. You are Russia. You are a slave for the motherland. You will do anything for her. You will kill for her. Kill, 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 kill.
Chaplain 47 felt his thoughts and being, his entire personality, dropping away beneath him. He looked down, looked into the face of the purest pain, and began the long descent down into the abyss of losing his mind. The hybrid stood several feet away, grazing on the knee-high dark grass and wild wheat of the field. Rock again reached for the canteen, but it was empty.
Must have poured out when I fell. Shit.
Rock lumbered over to the brid and pulled himself agonizingly up into the saddle. The thick black and white hide of the hybrid felt warm beneath his thighs. He undid the blue blanket from his saddlebag and pulled it around his back and shoulders. Rock leaned forward so his chest and head were resting against the massive steed's furry mane.
Giddy up, pal. You're gonna have to take care of things for a little while.
Rock slumped forward in the saddle and quickly fell asleep again. The hybrid moved carefully forward. It knew that its master was in danger, that it had to make decisions. It kept up a slow, even pace, mindful of its unconscious load. From time to time, it turned its huge head around, and its orange-brown eyes took in the master, who hung roped down to the creature's back. The master was alive, but he was hurt. The brid walked and walked, keeping its direction with its strong sense of smell, which sensed moisture far ahead. It kept a dead course for the life-saving liquid. When Roxon next came to, it was late afternoon. He felt himself rocking slowly back and forth in the saddle and opened his eyes. They were moving through fields of bright, madly colored flowers. His body felt stronger now. The poison must have nearly worked its way through, though he still felt quite peculiar. He sat up straight in the saddle and rubbed his eyes and face. The skin was coated with a greasy paste, which he wiped off with a bandana from his pocket. He needed water, bad. He hadn't drunk for what seemed like days, and his lips and throat felt parched as a desert. But there was no water in sight. Suddenly, Rock saw something that would do just as well. He guided the Palomino to the right.
Whoa, Snorter.
Rock came to a grove of large plants, red stalks with yellow fruits covering them. He had learned many secrets of the land when young. This particular plant, with gourd-shaped fruits, had been shown to him by a group of mountain men Rock had hunted bear with for several months when still a teenager. He cut the fruit near the tapered end, making a hole about 3 inches wide. Inside was a supply of liquid that the plant stored within itself for droughts. Roxanne drank 3 of the fruit's contents down and then fed the hybrid, who took to them with great appetite. The Doomsday Warrior stripped down to nothing and washed his torn flesh with a cleansing nectar. He looked over his bronze, muscled body carved from iron. He must have been stabbed over 100 times by the poison thorns. Little pinpricks, still red and swollen, blue and purple covered his entire frame. Several wounds were quite infected, puffed up as large as grapes, poking grotesquely out from his skin. Rock cut these open with his knife and squeezed the pus and poison out. Then he washed them clean with the plant nectar. The sores burned when the liquid touched them, but then quickly soothed. The plant's juices must have medicinal properties that even the mountain men hadn't known about. He'd have to return someday and bring some of these back to Dr. Schechter.
Hey, you want a bath, Snorter? Yeah, you do. Here you go.
Rock then scrubbed down the hybrid, flapping its long gold and white tail in excitement. When they were both in better shape, Rock set up camp for the night and ate a meal of berries and fruits, which were plentiful in the area. He fell asleep under the splashing diamond sea of the stars. When he awoke the next morning, he felt almost normal again. Rock got off to an early start and Snorter quickly hit a good pace. They were days behind schedule and had a lot of ground to cover. The next few days of travel were uneventful, or as uneventful as the world of America 2089 AD ever became. Rock had found a large inland lake filled with fish and was able to catch a few catfish-type creatures, rows of needle teeth and a large coxcomb, red as a rooster's, hanging down from beneath their jaws. But they tasted like heaven. On the evening of the fourth day after his bout with the poison thorns, Rock came to a series of low mountains, very rocky and steep. He found a gully, an ancient, dried-up stream bed, only slightly wider than the hybrid and moving slowly. He had scarcely gone more than 100 yards along the stream when he suddenly saw shapes ahead. Timberwolves, saber-toothed, their fur raised up on their backs, eyes lit up like stars at the sight of such a big fat dinner that Roxanne and the hybrid would make. They edged forward, slinking on all fours, until they were about 40 feet away. Their huge curved fangs protruded insanely from their jaws, nearly a foot long, glistening with the dripping saliva of their hunger. Rock slowly eased his shotgun pistol out and unslung his Liberator rapid-fire rifle from beneath the saddle. There were at least 30 of the large silver and black-haired predators, nearly twice as large as their pre-war ancestors. These stood nearly 4 feet high at the shoulder and weighed between 200 and 300 pounds. But their leader was even larger, a good 4.5 feet tall, brilliant silver coat with eyes as bright as fire.
Easy, boy, easy.
Although its instincts told it to run, the trust of Roxanne was even stronger, and the hybrid stood its ground. The leader came at Rock at a quick gait, which turned to a charge at about 20 feet. The leader of the pack leapt into the air from nearly 15 feet away, its carnivorous fangs trailing saliva. The buckshot tore through the immense carnivore, nearly severing the creature's head. The lifeless eyes of the 285-pound leader were wide open, staring straight up at the darkening sky. The next two most powerful members of the pack, nearly as big as the fallen leader, charged at Rock. He waited until they were a millisecond away. Only one fell. He fell to the hard rocks of the stream bed, both weapons flying from his grasp.
Come on, you fucking animal!
Rock waved his bowie knife in the air. The black pelted wolf sprang. The wolf managed to bite Rock's arm, penetrating flesh and muscle, but hadn't had the chance to rip away.
Snorter!
About 5 yards away, the Palomino was rearing and kicking with its powerful hooves. The wolves were trying to circle it, wary of the power of the tremendous legs. He saw the shotgun pistol half hidden under a rock. A wolf managed to leap on the brid's back, trying to get its jaws around the big steed's neck for the kill. The shot tore into the predator's side, its chest bones exposed and poking through the bloody hide. Roxanne ran forward and reached the hybrid side. They didn't get far. A group of the wolves had gathered just ahead of them for another charge. There was no time for finesse. Rock knew that if they all charged, it was all over. He had to scare them. He aimed at the lead wolves in the pack. He ran out of ammo, but the wolves wouldn't know that.
Yeah!
It worked. The battle was over. The remaining wolves fled, their tails between their legs like a pack of frightened puppies. They had no stomach to fight the killing machine before them. Calming Snorter down and treating his wounds with antiseptic and salve, Rock was soon moving forward again atop the hybrid, wary of every sound, every glowing eye in the immensity of the night. The bodies of the dead wolves lay like monuments to the power of man. The rising moon burned down on the corpses, lighting the red blood with shimmering sheen as nature's second line of predation moved in for their meals. Wild dogs, owls, blood spiders, all dug into the warm flesh. Nothing was wasted, nothing was overlooked.